Welcome, everyone. This is Avish Parasher, and you are listening to the Smart Ass Success Teleseminar Series. This is week number 5, and today your expert is going to be none other than me. And our topic today is going to be how do you flow and deal with obstacles and setbacks that come along the way. Now, since I find these teleseminars work much better in an interview Q&A format, because that way someone can ask me questions and make sure I'm being clear and not glossing things over, I've invited someone to actually serve as the interviewer. I know on the rest of these calls, I'm the interviewer and I interview the expert. This call, the role is going to be reversed. And so today I asked my friend Mike to serve as interviewer. So hello, Mike.
Hey, Amish.
Well, thank you very much for doing this, Mike. And just, you know, to do a little propaganda right at the top, Mike is not in the kind of motivation self-improvement field. However, Mike is, and we've used you actually, Mike, as an example in a couple of the previous teleseminars. So for those who remember Scott Ginsburg's session, which was week 1, on that session we talked about morning pages, and Mike, I used you as an example of someone who went through the morning pages process and really basically in 3 weeks suddenly completely changed the direction of your life because you realized what you really wanted to do. So people should be a little familiar with at least your story.
Yeah, woohoo!
And just for people who might be interested right now, Mike is he's Mr. Video Game. He owns co-owns a video game studio in Philadelphia. So Mike, why don't you give a quick 10-second plug for anyone, even though this is a call about personal development, just for anyone who might be interested in learning more about you and what you do.
Sure. My 10-second plug is I started in the field of writing music for film and television and video games, and actually through several mentors, one of whom you might know as Scott Ginsburg, one of whom you might know as Fred Gleek, and one of whom you might know as Avish Parashar, helped to develop my business skills to the extent that I was approached by several other video game developers to make a video game studio called Play Eternal. And we're based out of Philly, and we're currently building titles for Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network. And if you see our titles out there, buy them, because you keep people like me bringing bacon home to my 5-year-old daughter.
Super. And that's Play Eternal. Is it PlayEternal.com? Is that signed up yet?
It is PlayEternal.com. Yep, it's just down for this week because we're migrating to a new server. But that'll be back in a couple of days.
Okay, super. And for my own personal propaganda, obviously, you know, if you're listening to this call, you know my website because the sign-up for this call was on my website, which is motivationalsmartass.com. Lots of information there about what I do, as well as my free humorous personal development blog, some additional products, and you get a free ebook, which is the basis for this teleseminar. The ebook is 7 steps to figuring out and getting what you really want. I took those 7 steps, and that became the format for this teleseminar. So go check that out. Go check my stuff out. Okay, here's what we're going to do today. And I'm going to turn the question portion over to Mike in just a moment. Today what we're going to talk about is how do you flow with obstacles? How do you deal with setbacks? Because up to this point, we've dealt with the planning process. But once the rubber meets the road, things will happen. So we're going to talk about how to improvise. And just for everyone listening, my background is in improvisational comedy. I've studied it, performed it, directed it, taught it for about 20 years now. Ran my own group, and out of that group came the skills and experience built for my current speaking business, which is showing individuals and organizations how they can use ideas from improv comedy to think quickly, work together, communicate effectively, and deal with change without whining about it. So that's kind of my background real quick to give you an idea of where it's coming from. And for those who are curious, Mike, I've known him for a very long time, but Mike also performed improv comedy with me for a long time, so he is familiar with this topic. But as my friend Fred says, Mike is going to be playing the role of Mr. Stupid, which is when I get all excited and passionate and talking about stuff. If I gloss over anything or I drop a line that needs explanation, or if, you know, maybe it's a good idea but you're not sure how it'll work, Mike is going to ask me those questions to keep me honest and make sure that you, the listener, gets as much out of this as possible. So, Mike, are you ready to get started?
I'm ready to become Mr. Stupid.
Excellent. It's a role you've been training for a long time.
Oh, yes it is.
So let's get started, Mike. I will now turn it over to you. You are now the interviewer, and I am the interviewee. So let's go ahead and just start, you know, asking me what you want to know about improvising with the unexpected.
Okay. Awesome. All right, Anish. Well, now I'm going to start off from being Mr. Stupid, especially starting with your website, you know, Motivational Smartass. That implies a certain level of comedy, and improv, you know, as you know, is really rooted in comedy. So why is it that then improv and improvisation can be such a critical skill outside of comedy? I mean, what do you feel makes improvising such a critical skill for life?
Well, you know, the whole premise here is that everything, you know, things will always go wrong. You know, there's not a, one of the lines I use in my speech, I ask the audience, you know, do things sometimes change? Do things sometimes not go as planned? Do the people around you sometimes do inexplicable and seemingly idiotic things? The answer, obviously, is yes. Stuff always goes wrong. Even when you have the best plan in the world, there's always unpredictable events. And most of the unpredictable events we're going to talk about and that I've talked about are other people. You know, you go out and you put something out to market and the client or the prospect don't respond the way you want. Or you hire a vendor to do some work for you and they're supposed to have it to you by Monday and then 3 weeks later you're still waiting on it. Things like that. Sometimes the unexpected could be a market condition, you know, when the economy cracks out with a giant ding, as I like to call them, based on this improv exercise I do where I ring a bell and every time I do it, I change it. That's why I call the unexpected events dings. But, you know, dings can come in big and small sizes, but if you just have a plan, you can have a great plan, but if you're not able to deal with the unexpected, then that plan's going to break down at some point. You know, maybe tomorrow, it may be in a few weeks, it may be in a year. You know, if it's a small plan that's not very long and it's not a very ambitious goal or dream, you might be able to complete it from start to finish without anything changing. But the people who really succeed in life and who really take their lives to the next level are the ones who not only plan well, but when things go wrong, they either course correct, fix it, deal with it, or they even improve their situation when things go wrong. So I honestly believe the people you see at the top of the food chain or who are really living full lives aren't the ones who had the best plan, though planning is important. They're the ones who are just able to flow the best when plans went wrong. As I say, anyone can succeed when everything goes right. What separates people who succeed from those who fail is how well they roll with it when things go wrong.
That makes a lot of sense. I was going to ask that question, a follow-up. I was like, well, when something goes wrong, why don't you just take a step back and make another plan? You know, what do you need improv for?
It's a good question. And actually, you know, improvising, it gets a bad rap, right? I mean, I'm a professional speaker. So when I tell people I got to go work on my speech, I got a presentation, they're like, oh, well, why don't you just improvise it? You know, improvisation isn't about, you know, flying without a net or having no plans. And it's not even about not thinking. It's about training your mind to think in a certain way. And so you're right that if something goes wrong, then coming up with a new plan, that to me is improvisation. What's not improvisation is when something goes wrong, you stick your head in the sand and ignore it. Or you just try to work your existing plan harder. Like, oh, well, I'll just go put more effort into this. That, to me, is not improvising. But making a new plan when something goes wrong, to me, is a part of improvisation.
That makes a lot of sense. You're right, taking that step back. So this kind of ties into the next question I was going to ask, which is, you know, when you see improv comedy, and I'm sorry, I'm going to say improvisation. It's not fair to say improv comedy. Improvisation is, like you said, the fact of, you know, thinking about the world a certain way. There are skills and drills that you do that are designed to kind of make you better at the stage theatrics of improvisation. So you're kind of touching on it already, but in your experience, when you see people apply improvisation off stage, what skills are applied to the people who are off stage and not performers? Like how does this apply to them, and what skills do you see them kind of manifesting, or abilities, or mindsets?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when people see or hear improv or improv comedy, you know, think of TV shows like Whose Line Is It Anyways, and it just looks ridiculous. So a common question is how can that possibly apply to the real world? Because, you know, improv comedians do really goofy, stupid, silly things. So, you know, like you mentioned, what are the skills? Well, the underlying skills are the same whether you're improvising on a stage to make people laugh or whether you're improvising at your job to fix something went wrong, or whether you're improvising your personal life when you're having kind of a, you know, an issue, like on a family vacation. The underlying skills are the same. It's the application that may be a little different. You know, on stage, you apply your improv skills in ways that make people laugh. In the business world, you apply your improv skills in ways that build profit. In personal, maybe you apply it in ways that increase fun or increase your relationship, things like that. So the skills that lead to great improvisation are the same. It's how you apply them that changes. And, you know, I could go through the skills. There are a lot of them. There's what you focus on. There's quick thinking. There's saying yes and. And I believe we're going to get into those all in detail as we go through the call. But, yeah, I think that's, you know, if you think about it in terms of improv comedy, you'll be confused as to what this means. But if you just think about thinking quickly and dealing with the unexpected, then it should be pretty obvious how this stuff all applies.
Right, right. So, I mean, but you know, there's a thousand ways to deal with the unexpected. I mean, the first thing, you know, one of the famous things that I always think about when I think of people not dealing well with the unexpected is the, quote, panic attack. You know, this is gonna ruin everything. So, I mean, you know, you think dealing with the unexpected, that's still pretty broad. What are the specific skills, like, you know, what's the, for example, there's got to be some core skill that lets people react to the unexpected effectively, right?
Well, let's talk about the first, and you know, I'm going to give them in an order that I think works best in terms of people working on them and learning them.
Okay.
But, you know, you can do them in a different order, but...
Right.
But this is, I think, the one that...
The way people
should focus on developing. And the number one thing, the number one skill that... I think the world would be such an infinitely better place if everyone developed the skill. It's just emotional control. Or, in a broader term, emotional impulse control. And what that means is that I think so many of people's problems are caused because their emotions get away from them and they say something or do something without controlling themselves first. You know, and you can see this in if you think about bad customer service experiences, right, it's just someone gets irritated and says something, they snap. They're just unable to control their emotions. You know, if you've ever been in a relationship, right, this is when, you know, your partner snaps at you. You know, for something, they're just emotional about something else that has nothing to do with you, but they just get angry. And that inability to control the emotions, I think, is what really stops people from improvising. Because when things go wrong, you need, again, we talked about this a second ago with the planning and how making a new plan is part of improvisation. When things go wrong, it's a very, like you said, it adds stress. So a person's first instinct, well, you don't know what your first instinct is, right? If you let emotions take over, you're going back to your default response. And if your default response is not optimal, then when bad things happen, when the unexpected happens, you're going to have a suboptimal response, if that makes sense. Let me give you an example. You've probably experienced someone who, when they get stressed, they snap, and then they come back to you a day later, an hour later, and we're like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, it's just, I always get like that when I get overwhelmed. I just get really, you know, touchy. And, I mean, it's so common, but to me, that's such a weak statement. Because if you know this is an issue for you, and you're not doing anything about it, what you're saying is my default response is to be a jerk. And so please forgive me. I think, you know, we all have those rare buttons that happen. I mean, if something happens to you once every couple of years, and you respond to it poorly, you know, our goal is not to be perfect. But if something happens to you every week, you know, a couple times a month, and you just let emotion take over to a point where you snap at other people or, you know, insult clients. I mean, we've seen managers do this, right? I have a wealth of stories from someone very close to me who has a horrible manager, a horrible boss. And yeah, when he gets stressed, he just like, you know, snaps at people in the middle of meetings, in public, at his employees, illogically and for no reason. Because he's never learned emotional control, which is, okay, let's not respond with the first emotional response, but rather control our response.
Right, right.
So I know I just kind of dumped a lot of info there, so let me know if that, you know, if there are any questions or if I'm clear enough on that.
It's great, and it makes a lot of sense. It does make a lot of sense. You know, the thing, it's funny, and this we'll probably be able to go into, and I'm kind of, you know, just flowing along with this. It's funny because the way that sounds, it sounds like, you know, I don't want to say the opposite of improvisation, because I want you to clarify this. Because what you described is, okay, well, our first impulse is to do X, and that's not very healthy. So a lot of it's the ability to kind of check yourself and basically be like, what's the best response, without, instead of just immediately firing from the hip. So that seems like it's not improvisation, because it seems like you are, quote, stopping and planning. But I don't think you mean it that way. It seems like it's a natural response to get emotional. So how do you check it, but make it feel improvisational, meaning, you're not like kind of locking it down, but instead you're looking at it in the right way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, and that's a great question. And I, you know, when I've taught quick thinking, and then I tell some people, well, you got to stop for a little bit. They're like, wait, that makes no sense. So it's a very good question, and there's two parts of the answer to that. The first is that, as I said, when your emotion kicks in, what happens is your default response kicks in. If you're learning a new skill, such as how do you deal with the unexpected, you need to retrain that default response. So a great improviser who's on stage, and they just seem to be, you know, throwing response, this is from a comedy standpoint, you know, they're able to, no matter what happens, they somehow are able to whip out some kind of really funny thing that everyone likes and builds a scene and just seems to be really both artistic and hilarious at the same time. They are able to do that because they're able to say those things like, you know, within 1/10 of a second. They're able to do that because they, over the years, have trained that default response. So the first way to retrain your default response is to pause and not, you know, it's to stop doing what you're already doing. So if your initial default response is to be mean or stressed or angry, the first step to retrain that is to stop that. And that's where that pause and break comes in as far as control. The second thing is that, again, improvising is just, you know, again, it's not, quick thinking is part of improvising, but it's not the whole piece. And so there's nothing wrong when something doesn't go as planned for you to pause and think it through for just a little bit. And that, again, like we said before, making a new plan, still improvising. Just because you take a couple of seconds before you respond doesn't mean you're not improvising. You know, improvising doesn't mean not thinking. You know, it just means, you know, what do you do when things don't go as planned?
Right, right. And it does seem like I understand what you're saying, because it does seem like such a natural response to get emotional and to check that. And you've already touched base on, like, how do you not, you know, get emotional? But even when thinking about it, is it sometimes hard to kind of not be, attached to your emotions? Even when you're thinking about it, you know, even though you haven't said anything, you're still really upset at the bad thing that's happened. You're still really, so how do you kind of deal with that emotional attachment that you have, you know, when you've had that emotional response?
Yeah, and I'm not here to tell you that you can't ever get mad, you know. But the problem is when you respond with emotion, I mean, I was using the word suboptimal, which is a very intellectual-sounding word, but it belies how devastating it can be, because when you respond out of emotion, usually what ends up happening is you can take a situation that's mildly bad and make it infinitely worse. You know, it's like the worst argument I ever got in with someone in my life was they were mad about something, and I didn't think they were justified in what they were mad at all, but they were talking on and on and ranting on and on. And I just sat there and kept my mouth shut. And then finally, I'd had enough, and I'd exploded back. And I was like, I'm going to say this one line that's going to, you know, shut them up. And, of course, all they did when I responded was make the situation 10 times worse. And that's what happens when we let our emotions respond. You know, we respond out of emotion first. So it's so critical that we do this, which is why the first thing, and it's a simple 3-step process that I teach people to do, and it's called PBT, and those 3 letters, P, B, and T, stand for a simple technique called pause, breathe, think. And I know this sounds so elementary, and in fact it is. I learned this technique myself when I was out doing programs for elementary school kids to teach them how to not bully and how to not respond in violence. And all PBT means is when something goes wrong or when you're about to open your mouth, pause, take a couple of deep breaths. It could be 1, it could be 10, you know, depending on the situation, and think before you open your mouth. And that's all there really is to it, because what that does is the pause is a stop. It stops you from the default response, which is probably suboptimal. Breathing calms you down, lets the emotion dissipate. And then thinking, and we're going to get to this, and I'm going to want to talk about this a little bit, about the big picture, but thinking lets you put things in perspective before you respond. It's a simple 3-step process. But, I mean, come on, you can tell me, if everyone in the world were to simply pause, breathe, and think before they open their mouth, wouldn't the world be just such a better place to live in?
Oh, goodness, yes. I got to go 9 examples right now where it would be better, you know? Well, you touched also on that idea of, you know, kind of keeping your eye on the big picture, it puts things in perspective. But could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because I think that's kind of an important part of the whole PBT.
Yeah. Well, here's what you want to do is when the unexpected happens, and let's just say if the customer is calling you and they are canceling a contract that you had, and you know, it was a really big contract and it was going to help pay for things and you know, blah, blah, blah. So the first step is the pause, breathe, think, so that you don't respond in anger, you know, call them an idiot or a swindler for taking, you know, for reneging on a contract, because all that's going to do is increase the argument, increase the bad emotion, and you certainly won't be able to build a business relationship out of it. The thinking part is to think about your big picture goals before you respond. And this is so critical because most people's time horizon is so short when it comes to their immediate day-to-day actions. You know, they think about what's going to feel good in the next 5 minutes as opposed to what's going to make a difference in my life in 5 years. And when the unexpected happens, this is how people respond. They don't think things through. They look at this tunnel vision like, oh my God, I can't believe this person's calling me, canceling my contract. What I would recommend they do is step back, breathe, again, the pause, breathe, and then think about, okay, what is my goal here? What is my long-term goal? Well, my long-term goal is to build a successful business, is to, you know, make a profit, make some money. Then you think through, well, okay, what's the best response to this client to achieve that goal? 99% of the time, it's not going to be to yell at them and to exacerbate the conflict. It's going to be this yes-and idea, which I know for a fact we're going to talk about later, so we'll save that. But it's going to be more about, okay, how can I work with this person? All right, now they're in financial problem. How can we fix this situation? Or maybe if I'm just understanding in the short term, they'll be able to come back in a year. You know, if you are able to pause, breathe, and think through the long term, and if you have a modicum of intelligence, you'll realize that it's very rare that exacerbating the conflict is going to help you out in any way, shape, or form in the long term. But you have to pause, breathe, and think to give your mind a chance to process that. And I think that's where many improvisations fail, is that no one thinks through the long term. They think about, I'm feeling an emotional pressure. I want to relieve that pressure by getting it out of my system, you know, and let the consequences be damned as to what this is going to do to me in the long run. And, you know, there's people who you probably know who, and it's probably happened to you, I know it's happened to me, where you go through a situation and you look back and you're just like, oh, I wish, you know, a month ago, I wish I had just kept my mouth shut. Or I wish I hadn't have said that a month ago. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one of the themes on some of these calls has been productivity. Last week we talked about productivity, getting more done in less time. If you're able to deal with the unexpected and deal with conflict much better, you're able to really devote your attention on moving your life forward as opposed to fixing mistakes from the past. And I think that's a really important thing. That's a huge benefit you get once you start thinking about your big picture before you respond.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, including with that, I'm going to jump on to a question that I wanted to ask, but it's a nice little link here, because you just said this great thing where you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that, or this, that, and the other. Conversely, when you make those excellent decisions, when you PBT, you know, you usually feel much happier about yourself. So, yeah, leading question, but how important is the attitude and the mentality when you're in those moments? I mean, how important is it to have the right attitude and have the right mentality?
It's critical, I think, and, you know, I don't want to be one of these power positive thinking people. Because I'm not someone who thinks you should just put your head down and grin and bear and, you know, always see the rose petals on every aspect of life. Well, what I learned first as a teacher and director of improvisation is that there's two mentalities that if people had, or if I could get them to develop, they would flourish into great improvisers. Here's a story. You'll certainly recognize this story because you were there with me. But over the years of running my improv group, Polywumpus, in the first few years, when we would hold auditions and people would come in and audition for the group, the first few years, I used to be really impressed with resumes and straight technical improv skills. So someone would come in, and they would have studied improv. Maybe they performed with another group, or they took classes, and, you know, I was like, oh, well, this person knows what they're doing. And then they'd get on stage, and they'd do some things technically correct, you know, versus a novice who never had any improv experience, and they would be sloppy. Over the years, however, of gaining experience teaching and working with improvisers, what I realized is that, you know, there was only two things that I only started looking for, really one thing, which is a combination of the two mentalities, is, you know, did the person look like they were fun? Did they look like I'd have fun working with them, and did they look like they were having fun when they're improvising, number one? And number two is, were they willing to take chances and mess things up, or did they act like they were just desperate to do things right? And what I found is that the people who came with that attitude, or those combined of those two attitudes, regardless of how much or how little improv skill they had before, were the ones who got better the fastest and became the top performers in the group. And in fact, it got to a point where a lot of improv experience, when you came into audition for my group, could work against you. Because, hey, if you came in with a lot of experience and I'm like, well, you're not that good, I'd be like, what's wrong with you? Why do you have all this experience and that's what you're performing? Or, what I had to do with a lot of members of the group was I had to retrain them. You know, I had to break down all these preconceived notions they had, all this fear of failure. And there was a small number of people I was able to train this mentality in. And they, once they did that, they again took off and got much better. But that's much harder to train than skill. So that's why I would much rather take a novice with the right attitude than an experienced person with the wrong attitude. So be willing to have fun and be willing to make mistakes and fail. If you have those two attitudes, you're able to improvise. And, let me pause. I want to say one more thing about that, but let me pause and see if that whole thing I just explained made sense.
Yes, it actually does make sense. The failure thing can be tough to think about it in, I'm going to say a real-life scenario. So, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about how you could see it happening. Because, you know, a person could say, like, I might say, well, failure means I didn't get my contract or I didn't meet my milestone. You know, I don't want to be embracing that kind of failure, like, because that's going to cost my business. So, you know, what does it mean to be embracing fun in your work life, in your romantic life, in your family life? Makes perfect sense, totally. It lowers stress. But embracing failure can seem to be a little bit scary. There must be a way to think about what constitutes the right failure and what constitutes the wrong failure. Does that make
sense?
Yeah,
and it's a good question I get a lot because, you know, obviously we don't want to – I'm not saying failure is okay. Failure sucks and failure has consequences, you know. If you go out and try to start a business and it fails, you know, you lost a lot of money, you can lose your house, you know, if you have loans, I mean, you can be messed up for a long, long time. If you've got a big contract and it fails, again, they're very real consequences of failure. But here's the thing. I'm not talking about accepting failure. What I'm talking about is accepting the possibility of failure. And what I mean by that is that you're going to fail or you're going to succeed. And stressing about the possibility of failure does nothing but make you more likely to fail. You know, we're creatures of control, and improvisation is about relinquishing control. And one of the ways control manifests is we feel that if we're afraid of failure, we feel like we have to do something. Doing nothing is the hardest thing in the world for people. So, but weirdly enough, we've convinced ourselves that worrying about something is doing something. You know, have you ever had a problem that's coming up, and, you know, maybe it's a meeting you're dreading, or, you know, some event that you're like, oh my god, everything's going to be horrible and you're worried about it. And then you somehow distract yourself like an hour. Maybe you work out, maybe with friends. And then at the end of that, all of a sudden you remember that meeting that's coming up. And not only do you get stressed again, but you suddenly feel guilty or more stressed because you just spent 2 hours not worrying about it. Like, you feel bad that you weren't worrying about it. So for some reason, we've convinced ourselves that thinking and worrying about something is actually doing something. And it's not. All you do when you worry about something is take energy and focus away from working on the solution, which is the only thing that's going to make you likely to succeed. Does that make sense?
That does make sense, actually. And then that really makes sense, especially that point about the accepting the possibility of failure and then moving beyond that, you know, and just giving yourself the freedom to not think about that anymore, accept it.
Yeah, well, I got this, actually, and I think you know the story as well. It's from it's this book called A Book of Five Rings, which was written by a 17th century samurai. And in there he talked about this line, which is the way of the warrior is the resolute acceptance of death, which basically means that, you know, back when you were sword fighting, a warrior had to accept the possibility of dying, because if you didn't, he'd be afraid. And that fear would make him stressed, make him tight, make him unable to perform at his best. The warrior who accepted, you know, hey, I'm going to do a sword fight, I may very well die in this. But the one who said, you know what, that's a real possibility, they said they put that aside and never think about it again and put 100% of their focus on not dying, on winning the sword fight. So, you know, ironically, the ones who were worried about dying were the most likely to die. In the same way in improv, the ones who were most worried about trying to make the audience laugh or, oh, what if they give me a suggestion I can't deal with, were the most likely not to do well. In sales, the ones who are the most worried about not making the sale are the ones who won't make the sales. So once we put aside that, and I got to tell you, I don't know if you're familiar with the law of attraction, but let me tell you, law of attraction people do not like it when I explain this principle, because they hear me say it and they think I'm putting my attention on failure. You know, they're like, oh, you know, you can't even consider the possibility of failure, so, you know, you should never, they get mad at me when I talk about this. But what's ironic is if you just step back and say, you know what, I did this when I used to get nervous before speaking. Let's talk about speaking, because a lot of people get nervous. And I'd use this resolute acceptance of death if I started to feel nervous. I'm like, you know what? You might fail. This might be the worst speech ever. And if so, you'll deal with it. You know, what's going to be, what's going to be. But once I accept that, I don't think about failure at all anymore. And it's very freeing to say to yourself, hey, if the worst happens, I'll deal with it. You know, I'll survive. Because then you don't worry about it anymore, and all of a sudden your energy goes up, your focus goes up, and you perform much better.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Not that it's going to be the mic show, but when I was in Los Angeles pitching my game to, you know, five of the top publishers in the world, I mean, guys who have done, you know, the multi-million-dollar games, I was the pitch guy, and I got in there, and there was this moment where I was like, I'm about to sit in front of people who have the ability to give me $2 million, and I'm going up against I can make an absolute fool out of myself. I can make our entire studio of 18 people look like a bunch of idiots, and same thing. I did that. I accepted it. I said it's a very real thing. I prepared as well as I could, but, you know, I could kick the power plug out of the wall. But then once that happened, it was, quote, left at the door. And then I just said, all I'm going to do is go in and have fun, get in the moment, you know, fall in love with my product all over and again. And, you know, that's it. I didn't have any lingering mental or emotional conflict about the possibility of failure because I'd acknowledged it before going into the room. So,
well, that's the sales things, right? I mean, the sales people are, one of their mantras is that, you know, every no is one step closer to yes. And so to them, they reframed even what failure is, so it doesn't bother them. You know, and since one of the themes of this whole teleseminar series is just how to figure out what you really want and then create a plan and then go get it, and now my piece here is dealing with unexpected along the way, these two attitudes of fun and failure really define whether or not you're going to succeed at something. And by that, what I mean is, if you and everyone listening thinks about an activity that they excel at, that you're really good at, that you're, you know, it's just something you do really well, and, you know, you're passionate about, you can see yourself following through on, chances are when you think about it, you have fun when you're doing it, and when you do it, you aren't really afraid of failure. You know, failure may have consequences, but you're not afraid of failing. Like, for me, that's improv comedy. I can go on stage, and it's fun for me to do, you know, and I've got so much experience doing it that really there's very little stress or fear about, oh, my God, what if I can't think of anything to say? So it's all just fun. On the flip side, if you think about something you hate doing and you don't feel you're very good at, chances are when you do it or when you think about it, you don't think about it as fun, and you put too much importance on it, so you're afraid of messing it up. This, for me, is like sales and cold calling. I don't like sales much, and I hate cold calling. When I think about cold calling, I don't think about it as a fun thing. I know some people that talk about cold calling, oh, it's fun, you know, it's like a game. For me, I don't think about it. I think about it as a horrible, horrible activity. And failure, you know, for me, when I make cold calls, or when I used to make cold calls, it was about building my business. Each call felt so important that I was afraid of messing it up. You know, I didn't want them to say no. I didn't want them to be mad at me. And so when you combine those two, it really became an activity I hated and never got good at. If you apply those two filters to just about anything, you'll really be able to see what you're good at, what you're not good at, and what is potentially setting you up for long-term success. Now, I realize we're moving a little bit away from the, you know, how do you improvise? But as, you know, as you go through this 7-week series and make your plans, think about the long-term goals you set up. You know, do you approach with an attitude of fun? Are you willing to fail? And think about the day-to-day activities you've set up to reach that. Let's take working out, for example. You know, working out, if you haven't made the activity fun, you're doomed. And people are, you know, the body's so complicated that sometimes you'll work out and you won't lose any weight that week, even though you did everything right. And some people get really depressed by that, and they stop. But again, that's because they don't want to fail. If you approach it with the attitude, it's okay if this doesn't work, if you trust the plan, keep it fun, be willing to fail, over the long term, those are the people who succeed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense, actually. You know, it's funny. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, actually. And I'm gonna leapfrog this back into the improv thing, because what this is, what you're talking about, from what I'm gathering, is this idea of, like, you know, making sure you have your focus correctly oriented. Now, you just talked about the two core, you know, kind of emotional attributes, which is cultivating that love of fun and cultivating that acceptance of failure. In an improv, that makes perfect sense that, you know, you have that at a large level. But you've been saying before about, you know, the improvisers that were really great in your groups had certain core focuses. That was one of those important things that separated them. Fun and failure are like core mindsets. But what are some of the other things that you know, that those then should funnel into some sort of focus, right? So what are some of the core focuses that, you know, makes the improvisers?
Yeah, so like I said, the fun and failure, you know, when the unexpected happens, we have a tendency to get stressed and angry. So what I'm suggesting when it comes to that, you know, approach your improvisation actually with fun and realize that, hey, things mess up. We may now fail. Embrace that. Be willing to say, okay, that may happen. Let's put that aside and move forward. And once you've done that, it comes to controlling focus. And that, again, that PBT, it comes into that T phase, that thinking. We already talked about the first thing to focus on when the unexpected happens is to think about the big picture. You know, where do I want this to go now? You know, where am I headed to? What's the best action I can take right now to move me towards that long-term goal, as opposed to what's just going to make me feel really good in this moment? And that, it was a great improviser to do that, because, I mean, they train themselves to do this naturally. In fact, a quick, and I have a second focus I want to get to, but a quick story about when I really learned this about the big picture, is that in improv comedy, there were people who were really technically great improvisers. They would do everything right, but for some reason they just weren't that entertaining. And then there were other entertainers, there were other improvisers who would make some quote-unquote technical mistakes with their performance, but they were just so much fun to watch. And, you know, that's the person I want that second person in my group 10 times out of 10 over the technician. Because that second person understands the big picture, which is if you're performing a show, your goal is to entertain the audience. It doesn't matter how brilliant you are as an improviser if you're not achieving your big picture goal, which is entertaining the audience. So when you're improvising, it's the same thing. When something goes wrong, you know, do you complain, do you bitch and moan, or do you say, okay, what's the big picture? The second focus to have is to focus on what you can control and to let go of all the rest. This is the line that separates improvisers from people who get paralyzed, from people who whine, people who complain. Really, not just when things go wrong, but at any moment of the day. But we're talking specifically about when your plan suddenly fails. You have a choice. Do you focus on what you can control, or do you focus on everything else? And there are three things that people focus on that they can't control that totally stops them in their tracks and prevents them from improvising. And this is why plans fail, and this is why people give up. They focus on three things. Number one, they focus on the past. So they'll start saying things like, oh man, I wish I had started this project 2 weeks ago. or I wish I'd gotten to grad school 10 years ago. Or, oh man, if, you know, if my boss had just listened to my recommendations at the last meeting, we wouldn't be in this situation. So they sit there and they just start bitching about the past. The second place that will focus that doesn't serve them is the future. This comes back to the worry thing. This is like, oh my god, now that this went wrong, you know, I'll never build my business. Or, oh my god, I'm never gonna lose the weight and fit into my wedding dress. Or, oh my god, my boss at our status meeting now, he's gonna ream me out because I messed this project up. Again, that does nothing but create worry and stress in your life. Because you're sitting there thinking about it. The third thing people focus on when something goes wrong that doesn't serve them is other people. It's, oh, how could they have done that? If they had just done what I said, or, oh my god, what's this person gonna do now? Or you start worrying about, huh, I wonder what my, you know, if you got a sales meeting coming up, you're like, oh my god, what is my client thinking? So these three areas, now you can't do anything about those three. You cannot control them. What you can do, however, is influence them. Well, not the past. But you can influence other people, and you can influence future events. But the only way you can exert influence is by you yourself taking action right now. So what a great improviser does is not worry about mistakes from the past, is not really even worry about consequences of the future, other than that moment of the big picture thinking so they can pick a direction. And they don't really worry too much about other people. What they say is, what can I do right now to either improve the situation or get me to where I want to go? It's a really simple technique, but across the board, whether it's on stage, in business, in relationships, that's what great improvisers do. People who don't are the ones who you look at as unreliable, as flaky, as crazy makers, I think as you like to call them. You know, that's all it is. So every time, I mean, I would say ask is not just when things go wrong, but especially when things go wrong, ask yourself, am I focusing on what I can control, or am I giving power to things that I can't do anything about?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That idea of asking that question to yourself, it's, you know, something to, so this idea of the asking questions to kind of shift your focus. This makes a lot of sense, because you talk about how, like, you've got to stop that blunt response, that which we talked about half an hour ago, about that initial default response. Well, the questions you can ask yourself would stop that. So what are some of the questions, you know, when you want to orient your focus, what are the questions that you think people should ask themselves? The first one is what you said, which is, what can I do right now, right here, with myself to take action? What are some other questions that you might ask yourself to kind of get you out of your default response and get you into that focus point?
Yeah, that first one is key. And like you said, questions are just really important. It's the best way to redirect your mind is to ask yourself questions, especially when your mind is racing. So number one, like you said, what can I do right now, right here to fix the situation or get me to where I want? Number two is going back to the big picture, is step back and say, boom, what's my big picture goal? You know, what do I really want to achieve here is a good one. You know, the third one's kind of a collection of them. Is ask yourself a series of questions, of either or questions. Like, am I focusing on the problem or am I focusing on the solution? This one stops people up. Something goes wrong and they spend 90% of their time bitching about the problem. You know, complaining about how bad it was, how things messed up. Great improvisers spend time focusing on the solution. So am I thinking about the solution or am I focusing on the problem? Similarly, am I focusing on blame? Or am I focusing on what I can do? And this is a big one. The whiners, the negative people, the crazy makers, they love to look for blame. The great improvisers are the ones who look at progress, moving things forward. Now, this is not to say that you don't at some point want to figure out what went wrong, whether it was a person that you do need to assign blame responsibility to, or a system that broke down, or just random luck. But that all comes later. You know, this is where the fast part of improv comes in. Is to improvise, to deal with the unexpected quickly, you first focus on solutions and progress. Secondly, you focus on going back and looking to analyze what went wrong so you can prevent it from happening again. So I'd say, if you start with those four, you'll be able to instantly change your focus when things go wrong. What can I do right now, right here, to make this better? What is my big picture goal? Am I focusing on the problem or the solution? Am I focusing on assigning blame or making progress in the situation? So, I mean, and you can adopt your own as you go, but just with those four, you'll get a lot of control.
Nice. That makes a lot of sense. Actually, we're a little over halfway, too, so what I'm going to do is use it as a perfect opportunity for me to, you know, pimp you out a little bit. So,
yeah.
Let's pause for a second here, and I just want to have Anish just have you, you share with people how they can learn more about you in this program. We've gotten to a good point. How can they learn more about
you? Yeah, sure. And I think actually we're probably a little ways beyond halfway now, but you know, I guess we've still got a song. So real quick, motivationalsmartass.com is my information. So go to that blog, sign up for the free ebook, check out the blog. There's products there. And if you go to the website for this teleseminar, this is week number 5. There are 2 more weeks left. Go to smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. Right now, if you're listening to the free version, you can listen in when the calls are broadcast. However, if you want to re-listen to this call and re-listen to all the calls and get the transcriptions of all the calls, plus over $80 worth of bonuses from the various experts, you can get the paid version, which is very cheap. However, after the last call, maybe a week or so after the last call on December 13th, this deal will go away. I might still sell this package, but you won't get as many bonuses and the price will be higher. So if you want to re-listen to these, and believe me, as the person running them, I've been re-listening to them because they're amazing. I'm not saying that about my own session, I'm just saying in general, there's such great information. You can buy it and listen to it over and over again. So that's smartasssuccessteleseminar.com. So go check that out, sign up, and get yourself the paid version, and we'll take it from there. So yeah, I know we got a few more things to talk about. We're coming close to the hour here. So
we're in good shape, actually, and there's a couple of questions I wrote down that are going to drive us through, I think. So now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of the tactics, which is good. Here's one thing that I've noticed about improvising that can be troublesome for people, which is they ask those questions, they take a step back, they do the big picture, and their mind still gets them to just one option. You know, like, you know, again, the improv comedy thing, a game, there's a certain game where you ask, you know, what object appears in your hand? And the person takes a step back, you know, they're top of the scene, but they just keep on seeing a strainer. And I see a strainer, I can't think of anything but a strainer. So what do you say to those people who feel like they are stuck in, I can only come up with one option whenever I channel these questions?
Yeah, and this is really about accessing your creativity. And this is a giant topic, and I've written a book on it. I've done workshops on this for like last over 2 hours, so I'm going to touch upon. In fact, I'm not going to get too much in the how-to here, and if people are listening to this and they want more information, they can go to howtothinkquick.com, and you can enter your email. You get a free one-hour audio I did on this whole topic of just how you access your creativity. And that's free. So to answer your question, yeah, I think that people, we live in a binary world, which is, you know, binary is a computer language of ones and zeros. We live in an either-or world. And that either-or mentality is what stops people from being creative, and it's what stops people from improvising. What you want to do is train yourself to find the third, fourth, or fifth option in a situation. So, for example, in this program, you've created a plan. And then you use Neen tips from last week to, you know, figure out, maximize your productivity. So then you start working on that plan. But then the plan doesn't go as planned. Maybe it's just not working for whatever reason, or maybe the market condition changes, or maybe your schedule changed. You know, you thought you would have an hour every night to work on your side business that you want to start, but now all of a sudden, you know, your in-laws are in from out of town, they're going to be here for 3 weeks, you can't do it. So many people will look at that as an either-or situation. They'll say, either I can work 1 hour every night, or I can't. And that is the antithesis of improvisation. Brilliant improvisers, whether it's being funny or just being productive, don't stop at the first or second option because they know how to access their creativity, and again, go to howtothinkquick.com to get more on that because that's a really big topic. But they know how to access their creativity, so they don't just say yes or no. They say what else? So when you pause, breathe, think, say what's the big picture? What this does for you is step back. In fact, you have to let go of your original plan quite often to make a new one. Your new plan may resemble the original one very closely, but you have to first let it go. So for our example about the 1 hour a night person, it's not yes, I can work 1 hour a night or no, I can't. Look for the third option. What's the third option? The fourth or fifth option? Well, third option is, okay, maybe I can work 15 minutes a night just to get started. Maybe the option is, well, I can't work an hour at night, but I can work an hour in the morning. Maybe another option is, hey, my in-laws have an expertise. I can co-op them and get them to help me with this to make it even better. So, and that's just three right off the top of my head. You know, you could take a lunch break, you could do some
bartering, you can trade, like, you know, whatever it is. People get really stopped in their tracks. This is why people give up when they're working a plan. It's because an unexpected thing happens, their plan no longer applies. And since the plan was their only option, it's either yes or no. If that plan no longer applies, they stop. Whether they may give up permanently, or they may just get stuck for like a month or two. Like, oh, I thought I was going to do it, but then this didn't happen. Well, no, don't give up there. Use your creativity. Come up with a third option right away. This is what great improvisers do. And I mean, one thing I touched upon that I want to mention is this idea of the status quo. If you've got a plan or you've got a life and something goes wrong, you lose your job, you know, you get dumped, whatever it is, you know, big or small. So many of us, our first instinct, you know, that emotional response, is to want to get back to the status quo. So if you're like an accountant and you got downsized, you're like, oh my God, you know, especially if that's part of your identity, you rush out and try to find another similar accounting job. And yet, you know, this is actually, I read this in the book by one of our mutual friends, Pete Hobart. Well, you know that annoying phrase about like turning lemons into lemonade?
Oh yeah, lemons gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
I mean, it's a nice little phrase, but it always used to annoy me until I read Pete's book and he had talked about this. And you know, he says, you know, there's a thing about the Chinese symbol for crisis and opportunity is the same or something like that.
Right.
But what
right.
he said in there is this exact idea, which is don't, when you get knocked off course, don't try to get back to the status quo. Don't try to get back to where you were. Step back, again, that pause, breathe, and think, and ask yourself, how can I get back to a place that's even better than I was before? You know, that's how great improvisers leverage the unexpected. That's how they make the most of the unexpected, as opposed to, you know, just scrambling to get back to where you were. Well, now you're going to be behind the curve. So step back. Again, this comes back to those questions. How can I not just fix this? How can I make it even better than it was before? I mean, we all know people who got laid off, and they were depressed and angry. And then a year later, they're on this whole new opportunity, and they're like, yeah, getting laid off was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to wait to get laid off. You can do that every day, every time your plan doesn't go quite right. Or you can even reevaluate on your own. You can make the dings happen yourself and ask yourself, how can I make this better?
Right, right. And this actually ties into, this makes a lot of sense, the idea that you want to find more than just a binary option. You want to find 3, 4, 8, 9. This kind of ties into something that is, right, now I know this because we've been friends for years, but it's a critical part of your moving forward. Okay, so we've got to learn how to think. You know, we've got these tactics, we've got this way to shut off your default response and create a new response, which is awesome. And at some point, you have to take action. Now, here's the thing that I think a lot of people might be interested with. You come up with some ideas. I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. It's so easy for us, because they are outside our comfort zone, to just shut those off. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's going to be too hard. It's going to cost too much money. I don't know anybody in the business. My wife's never going to go for it. Whatever. How do you ensure that you have the right – how do you take action the right way? What do you say when you come up with these thoughts and these ideas and decisions? How do you take action the right way?
Yeah, well, it's a great question because – and this has been a theme through all the calls in this series, is that you have to take action. Even if a small action is fine, but you have to take action. So the two-word phrase that really all improvisers know, because it's the core of improvisation, is yes and. Y-E-S, comma, A-N-D. Say yes and to yourself, to the situation, to the unexpected, to move forward. So what will happen is you'll come up with ideas, and some of those ideas, you know, once you've done the pause, breathe, think, you step back, you ask yourself the questions, the big picture, what can I do right now, and then you find the third and fourth and fifth option. Some of those ideas will sound good, but like you said, your mind, because we resist change, is going to say, ah, I can't do that. No, I can't do that. Or, yeah, but that's not going to work. Or, yeah, my wife won't go for it. People who, great improvisers, have managed to change their internal dialogue from saying no or yes but to saying yes and. And all that means is when you come up with an idea, rather than saying, no, I can't do that, say, yes, I can do that, and here's what else I can do. Or, yes, I can do that, and here'll be the benefit. It sounds like such a stupid technique, but it's so powerful. And in fact, it's so powerful that I'm in the middle of a new book I'm just finishing up, on an entire book just on this one topic of saying yes and instead of yes but. So it's really all about, so when the unexpected happens, people who say yes but are whiners. Yes, but this wasn't supposed to happen. Yes, but they had just done what I said. You know, yes, but this is not my responsibility. The people who say yes and are the ones who, like we said before, take action. Yes, this happened, and here's what I'm going to do about it. Yes, my plan no longer applies, and here's how I'm going to make an even better plan. That is what gives you that mentality of thinking big picture and thinking of moving forward. So really start paying attention to yourself as you go forward. How often are you saying yes but to other people and to yourself? You know, when something goes wrong, are you immediately clamming up in a shell and saying yes but, or are you open to possibilities and saying yes and? Now, the reason great improvisers do this, or why it separates, is yes and also leads you to that third option, right? If you have two options, here's my plan, yeah, but the plan doesn't work, well, now you're done. It's like, well, here's my plan, and now it doesn't work, and here's what I'm going to do about it. Or, you know, I could have, that's the basic gist of it, right, is that yes and, when you respond with yes and, it forces you out of your comfort zone, which is what's scary. But out of your comfort zone is where all of your success, your solutions, your progress is going to come from. Because if it was in your comfort zone, you'd already be doing it. So yes and is scary because it's stepping out a bit into the unknown, but that's where great improvisers love to live, because that's the world of possibility. If you say yes but, what you're doing is staying totally locked inside your shell. So,
right.
Take action. The way you get yourself to take action is say yes and to yourself. And it doesn't have to be huge action. It can be little actions, little steps, you know, small things. That's fine. But just say yes and take a little action, because you will learn more about your plan and whether it's working or not by taking a little action than you ever would by spending hours just thinking about it. Too many people try to think through, this amazing plan and let me get all the details right. If you've got a good semblance of a plan, take some action. You'll get feedback as to, well, this is working, this isn't, here's what else I should do, blah, blah, blah. This all, I'm kind of rambling here because there's so many different elements, this is where they all tie together. This ties back to the fun and failure bit. When you say yes and step out into uncertainty, you have to do it with an attitude of fun, and you have to do it with an attitude of being willing to fail, because you're out in uncertainty. So if you don't have that attitude, you can't say yes and. So that's kind of how it all ties together.
Right, it all loops. But what's nice about the yes and, though, is it's a specific gesture you can make when you get to this point. You've got this idea of fun and failure, you're thinking of third options, and then there's that critical moment where it's like, how do you take action? You say yes and. So your third option is, oh, I can start this, I've been laid off, I can start this part-time business. Yes and, I've got three family members that I know need this work, and so I've got my first two clients. So that's the way you create that first momentum, right?
A lot of it's just getting some momentum is, the yes and is about taking one step. It's not about solving the whole problem. In fact, in an improv, we use this all the time where you are supposed to act out an improv comedy scene where you get two actors up there and the audience gives you a location. Like they say, okay, you're in a coffee shop and, your coworkers. And the reason some people struggle with that kind of an exercise is because they try to put together in their mind the entire scene. Like, here's this whole 3-minute long improv scene. Here's where we're coworkers and we're having an affair and at some point the boss is going to walk in. And those are the improvisers who always fail. The great improvisers are the ones who just take one step forward. Like, the first person will just say something simple like, oh man, this is a huge report we have to get done by tomorrow. And
right.
Then their partner will just accept that offer with a yes and take one step forward themselves. So no one's trying to put together this whole plan. They're just each taking one step at a time, seeing where it goes, building an amazing scene, which is easier and more entertaining than if either one of them had tried to plan the whole thing out themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's really comforting, too. It's just outside your comfort zone. So, just a little bit of momentum, a little bit of step, et cetera, et cetera. We've got about 5 minutes, and I've got one more question, which is perfect. So there's a ton of information that you gave out to us about the tactics and the strategies of improvising, using yes and as once you've begun to cover third, fourth, and fifth options, to use yes and to actually explore those options. That is a lot to throw at a new improviser, though. So I think, I'm trying to think of, are there ways that we can focus and maybe, the amount of improvising that we do, maybe remove some of the types of improvising that we do on a daily basis so that we can really pour improvising resources into making those critical decisions. Are there things we can do to keep ourselves from getting overwhelmed with the kind of, universal, just getting stimulated at all sides by the life's unexpected things? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I like to say in a lot of my blog posts is, you know, don't be stupid. Just because you can improvise doesn't mean you have to improvise. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm a really good improviser. I've done it for 20 years. But when I'm doing a keynote speech, I still practice. I still prepare. You know, when I'm going on a road trip, I still, you know, check the, you know, make sure my car has gas, and I make sure my cell phone is charged up if something happens, and make sure my spare tire is there. Like, being able to improvise doesn't mean that you don't prepare at all. It just means you, if out of your basic preparations things go wrong, you can handle it. So there's a couple of things, you know, before you go into an event, whether it's you're taking action on your plan or you have a big meeting coming up, you know, think through some of the things that could go wrong. Now, don't stay in this place for too long, because this is where the worriers and the crazy makers live. You know, I said before, don't, you know, focusing on the future, you can't control it, but you can prepare for it. So if you're actually actively doing things to prepare for the future, then it's fine to think about the future. So if you've got a meeting coming up, you know, work on your PowerPoint, put time into your presentation, you know, research, think about the questions you're going to get asked. If you've got a plan, you know, think about your own personal dings. We all have buttons that get pushed that tend to throw us off. Plan for those. Like, I know, it's taken me years, and, you know, I'm an idiot, it's taken me like 15 years of doing this to realize that I am not very productive the day after a road trip. So if I'm flying back from a speaking engagement on Monday, Tuesday is never really a very productive day for me. And for years, I used to feel so guilty because I would have been gone for days, and then I come back, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get 55 things done. But when I got back, my energy would be low, my motivation would be low, and I'd feel so guilty. Now I plan around it. So to me, the low motivation was like a ding, and I didn't deal with it well. Now I just plan around it. So plan for these things in advance. Know your personal dings. Know the buttons that get pushed. Know the types of things that happen that throw you, and plan for them in advance. The second way is afterwards. When ding happens, don't repeat it over and over again by not paying attention. So if something goes wrong, take time afterwards to analyze what happened, why did it go wrong. You know, we talked about that again when it comes to quick thinking and focusing on what you can control. Great improvisers focus on solutions and progress, not blame. However, after all is said and done, after you fix the problem, you've dealt with the ding, and you've moved on, then go back and say, okay, what went wrong? Why did this happen? Did the system break down? Did I do something wrong? Do we not account for something? So that in the future you could prepare for it and be ready to deal with it. So I absolutely believe that no matter how great an improviser you are, the less you need to improvise, the better off you're going to be. However, you have to be prepared to improvise, because no matter how well you prepare, something unexpected is going to happen. The universe is way too clever for you to prepare for everything.
That's right. It's folly to try and compete against the universe.
Exactly.
Well, this makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, and actually, this, you know, I had a list of things that I wanted to ask you to kind of learn more about this. Really, this has covered everything that I wanted to ask in this time. I mean, as you can hear, there's so much to talk about with this when we've just scratched the surface, but given some good strong takeaways about as you're going forward with your plan and you're running into the events that happen as you implement your plan, some core tactics and mindsets and strategies to be taken away that are rooted around improvisation. Avish, that's all I have for you. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, just to wrap this up real quick. First off, I want to thank you very much for playing my role this week and being the interviewer and asking lots of questions and making sure I'm being honest. Second, you know, thank everyone for listening. You know, really appreciate people tuning in. And third is wanted to give people some information. Again, for information about me and what I do, go to motivationalsmartass.com. There's a free blog. You can download a free ebook from there. And there's some products. There's my book, which you can get if you want more info on this topic, which that book is actually included as one of the bonuses if you sign up for the entire SmartAss Success Teleseminar, the paid version. So if you're listening to the free version, you have to tune in again next week, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, to listen to James Rick Stinson talking about how do we analyze our plans and make it more and more efficient and get even more and more effectiveness out of what we're doing. He's from fullpotential.com, and that's going to be an awesome session. However, if you're on the paid version, you get the bonuses, which include my book and a bunch of other things people have donated, as well as you'll get the recordings of these calls. You can download them, listen to them at your leisure, and you get the transcriptions. So if you'd like to read, you can read the transcriptions of these calls as well. And as a reminder, one more freebie I had mentioned earlier with creativity. You can go to howtothinkquick.com to get a free audio on accessing your creativity. So as a final thought, you know, everything, so much of what we talked about up to this point has been about planning, preparation, thinking things through. Last week with Neen, we got into how to be effective and take action. But I really hope people got a lot out of this and really pay attention. Because no matter how well you plan, things are going to go wrong. And I see so many people not fulfilling their dreams or achieving their goals simply because something went wrong and they were unable to deal with it. It broke their spirit and they gave up. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that overwhelming. If you just remember some of the, go listen to this again, listen to some of the things we talked about, like having that emotional control. Pause, breathe, think. Use those questions to control your focus. You're thinking about the big picture and what you can do, what you can control right now. And then, you know, find the third, fourth, fifth option, and then say yes and take a little action. Do those things, and really, the unexpected events won't crush you. They won't stop you. Yeah, they're going to happen, but you may even be able to use them to come out looking even better than before. So thank you once again to Mike. Thank you to everybody for listening, and we will see you next week with James Rick Stinson. Thanks, everybody.